DavidRenicky.com. I love this website. I love the man even better. Hello, David.
Good to be with you again, Bilko.
We've all got through a long weekend. You were telling me you were doing some astronomy stuff down your way. Is this part of... I noticed on your website you're talking about or answering a question about why should I join an astronomy club? I think people should take more advantage of this.
Yeah, they do. A lot of people don't know this, but the biggest question we get... We did a whole day's viewing yesterday. Now, here where I am, they close the street off. It's a street market for the holiday weekend, and it never fails to surprise me, and it never fails to happen that two or three people will come through the day and say that I've got a telescope and I don't know how to use it.
Really? They spend that money, they invest that much money?
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, okay.
And the thing, see, they buy it, they think you're getting a bargain, they take it home, and the moon's up. So you can get the moon, okay, what now? Where do I go from here? Well, there's a number of ways around that. One, you can download apps that'll quite easily find things for you. And one of those is Skyview, SkyView. That's one we recommend. There is a better one called StarChart, two words, StarChart. Now, I suggest that your listeners jot those down there because each one of those is good in its own way. StarChart, to me, is a Google program. It's free. So it's two words, star chart. We use this all the time because it's simple to use. There's nothing complex about it. When you hold it up to the sky, the object is directly in front of your phone. You don't have to, some of them are a little bit to one side, you know. With Skyview, it's the same thing, but they actually show you the planets as a planet, whereas the star chart shows you two as an enlarged dot.
Ah, yeah, okay.
So you got your choice of two, but they're the two that we recommend, and you can find your way around the sky. But look, we also suggest if you've got a telescope and you don't know how to use it, go to a star party or go to an astronomy group.
A star party, I love it.
Yeah, that's what they are. They're called star parties when you get a lot of people together, a lot of amateur astronomers together. There's quite a few of these happening around. But I think in the interim, find out where your local astronomy group is. If you don't know where they are, get onto your local Google page. Every suburb has got a Facebook page, and someone there will tell you. If not, go and do a search on Facebook for astronomy groups or clubs.
Around this part of the world, it's the Whopper Falls Observatory, WAPPA. Owen Benedict does them.
He's
there,
the one who would know where the others are.
Yes.
So what I'm suggesting is you take your telescope and you roll up and you say, look, I don't know how to use it. You will be overwhelmed by the amount of people who say, come over and help you. And they'll help you. They'll even put it together. They'll check it. They'll test it. If anything needs repairing, they'll do it. Because that's the sort of people they are. I've never met an amateur astronomer yet that doesn't take delight in showing somebody through the telescope. And you'll learn a lot about it. You not only learn how to use your telescope, and they'll tell you the good things and the bad things about it, so be prepared because there's always a bit of bias there, you know. But look, they'll
the human factor.
They'll show you what's in the sky and where to go and look for it.
Yeah, okay. More at DavidRenicky.com. Interesting story here about a woman who, can we use this term loosely, discovered the sun, David?
Well, that's a loose term, but this is a great story, and it shows you how badly treated women astronomers were in the early part of the 1900s. We go back to 1925, and we go and meet a lady by the name of Cecilia Helena Payne. Gaboshkin, it would be her married name, I guess. British-American astronomer who lived in the 1920s. In 1925, she put a PhD thesis in, and it was an explanation for the composition of stars and what makes the universe up. In other words, the relative abundances of hydrogen and helium must account for what makes up the sun. Now, nobody would believe her at the time. She was worthless trying to get anything done in those years. Now, she died in 1979. This woman discovered what the universe is made of, and there was not one mention of her discoveries, no mention, not a memorial plaque, nothing. Now, every high school kid knows that Newton discovered gravity, Charles Darwin with evolution, Einstein's relativity and time. But when it comes to the composition of the universe, there's nothing there. Cecilia Payne's mother thought it was a ridiculous idea for her to study. She refused to give her any money for education. So she went and got her own scholarship to Cambridge University. Cecilia Payne completed her studies, but Cambridge wouldn't give her a degree when she'd finished because she was a woman.
That's incredible, isn't it? But I know it's sad, but the fact is we're turning, and even as Alan Joyce said just the other day for Qantas, that you can't turn your back on 50% of the population because what's the brain power like in the percentage of the population you're not using?
Well, it was very blokey in those years, and listen to this, it gets even worse.
Yeah.
She said to them, up yours, Jack, I'm going to the United States to Harvard, and she joined Harvard University. Now, Cecilia Payne was the first person to ever earn a PhD in astronomy with a man by the name of Otto Struve. Now, Otto Struve was the most brilliant man. He was one of the most distinguished and prolific astronomers in the mid-20th century. She studied under him, and she produced a thesis that he said, quote, the most brilliant PhD thesis ever written in astronomy.
Jeez.
Can you imagine? This is one of the most advanced astronomers in the world.
What year are we talking again?
Sorry?
What year are we talking?
We're talking the 1925 to 1930.
Wow.
Now, not only did Cecilia Payne discover what the universe is made of, she also discovered what the sun is made of. Henry Norris Russell, a fellow astronomer, is given credit for that discovery because he stole it. She came to him with the details 4 years before, and he said, no, don't tell anyone, it's not worth it, don't publish it. So he produced it 4 years later, and it became a well-known work. He gets credit now in history for producing that. I think that's, I'm not going to say what I think, because you'll put me off air. Cecilia Payne is the reason we know anything about variable stars as well. These are stars whose brightness fluctuates, and we learn a lot about that. We learn how far away things are. Now, Cecilia Payne is credited also with breaking the glass ceiling for women in science in the Harvard Science Department. This lady should have been recognised, and along with others that have gone before. And doesn't it sort of underpin the story about the remember the women in NASA that weren't recognised?
The human computers, that's right.
Yeah, I forget. The movie was just on. I should remember it, for God's sake.
Yeah, I can't remember it either.
Hidden Universe or something like that.
Oh, Hidden Figures, Hidden Figures, that's right.
Hidden Figures, that's right, yeah. So it shows you how, see, this is, it's changed now. Everything has changed. But if women in those early years in astronomy and other branches of science, by the way, they came up with a discovery, Booker. They came up with an idea or a theory. It was always signed or undersigned or signed by
a man.
A man, yeah. And that would invariably get filed away or put in for production and publication, and all they see is his name at the end of it. And I think that's sad, but here we talk about a lady. Go and have a look at it. The story's on my website. There's a bit more detail than what we're talking about here, but Cecilia Payne is somebody who we should recognise.
Name to remember at davidrenicky.com. Now, you and I are both excited about the First Man movie with Ryan Gosling coming out next week. You've got a story about Rick Armstrong, Neil's 12-year-old son.
Yeah. He was only 12 when Dad blasted off for the moon, and he went to watch it happen. He's now 61, and it's the 50th anniversary of Apollo 11. Rick and his brother Mark, who's 55, auctioning off 3,000 things belonging to their father.
Wow.
Now, we lost him in 2012. These items include flags, medallions, stamped envelopes, all the memorabilia that he had and got involved with in his adventures with NASA. NASA, he also took a silk flag there, and it's expected to be the highest bid at auction there. It has to be the highest thing that they sell. That'll probably go for $250,000.
Are they trying to do this to set up some sort of fund?
No, because Armstrong ferreted this stuff away. And if they leave it there, it's going to, as they say, if they donated everything to a museum or a university, he said, quote, we know that if not most of it, or all of it, most of it would end up in boxes unseen and unstudied.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happens. They put them away and no one knows what to do with them. So there's one letter there that Armstrong wrote as a young boy to the Easter Bunny even, in his own handwriting. Yeah.
Yeah,
the
incredible.
First batch of 800 items are going to be done on November 1, and the rest will be done gradually bit by bit. And as Mark said, it was not an easy decision for him and his brother to sell their father's belongings. It's something they struggle with for quite some time.
Well, it's a piece of Dad, isn't it, really?
It is, yeah. Look, I think it's the way to go. One of the most unusual artifacts that went to the moon remained with Neil, and that was part of the Wright brothers' aeroplane. He took with him a piece of the propeller and also a fabric from the plane's wing.
I never knew that.
Yeah, they were taken to the moon. Not many people know that.
No.
Yeah, as a gesture of goodwill. And they're up for auction as well. Can you imagine what they're going to go for?
And I'm imagining too, with that movie coming out, you'll be watching it with eagle eyes to see just how accurate they portray.
I will be. Yes, I will.
Yeah.
Because I know a lot about this period. Can I just tell you something else?
Yes.
Quickly, you're going to like this. Being the first man on the moon apparently didn't mean much to the people who run Diners Club. In 1974, right, 5 years after he walked on the moon, he applied for a credit card with Diners Club.
Yeah.
And they knocked him back. He didn't think his credentials were good enough.
Celebrity status wasn't good enough in 70. Wow.
They sent back his application and his $15 check. Can you imagine? Hey?
Do you have to pay for a credit card back then, did you?
Well, application form you did, apparently that's what he did, yeah.
So the Diners Club was like the American Express of today, the platinum card.
Yeah, well, this is part of the, that's all there too, part of the rejection. Can you imagine knocking back a credit card from Neil Armstrong?
They would have had his signature, they would have had his name in lights, they could have had him doing the TV commercials.
D-U-M-B.
Exactly. And one final thing, David, why is Japan interested in getting these things on an asteroid, these rovers? I mean, what's the point?
If you could go back in time to the first formative years of the Earth and take a sample and bring it back to the present day, you would know exactly what the Earth was like when it was forming. The asteroid belt is like that. It's a living, breathing, flotsam and jetsam area of rock, a planet that tried to form that didn't form. Now, they've also found inside asteroids and a lot of meteors the organic material that we think made life happen here on Earth, when Earth was bombarded by asteroids and meteors. Now, that's what they've done. They've sent a spacecraft called Hayabusa to an asteroid. It's now landed on there. Two little rovers at the moment are running around the surface picking up samples. In a few weeks' time, the Hayabusa spacecraft, which is orbiting this asteroid, by the way, it sent back some amazing close-up photographs of the surface that'll knock your socks off. We've never seen the surface of an asteroid like this before. So it's going to, what they're going to do, they're going to fire a bullet, big copper projectile at the end of this month into the asteroid to break a bit of it off. And these little rovers are going to go and pick little pieces up. And they hope to bring them back here, land by 2020 and be taken to a laboratory. We might find inside these asteroid particles the basic building blocks of life.
Yeah. Yeah, and no Bruce Willis in sight.
No, sir.
More at davidrenihy.com. Great website to peruse. And if you are looking for different astronomy clubs, there's a great little link there to the Cosmos Centre in Charleville, Queensland, where you can do some outback stargazing.
Now, that is one place to go to. You will not go to a better facility than the Charleville facility up there. The Cosmos Centre has got so much going for it, Bilko.
Looking forward to that. All right, David, till next week, my friend.
Thank you. Bye-bye.